Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello, I'm Ian Stone, and this is the final show of the series. Yes, most of the dust has settled, but there's still some big games and one enormous game to go. And there's also a huge amount to talk about, so sit back on your most comfy bit of furniture and drink it all in. Because for the last time this season, the football's on. Yes, here we are for one last hurrah, and this season had a suitably dramatic ending. We'll be chatting about the top and bottom of the table. We'll also dive into the Kylian Mbappe, PSG and Real Madrid love triangle that brings to mind 70s TV drama Bouquet of Barbed Wire. And one for the kids, and we'll take a look forward to Saturday night's Champions League final in Paris. Joining me are the world-renowned beekeeper Ian Moore and the owner of a chain of chicken shops in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Ivo Graham. Morning, chaps.
Morning.
Hello, Ian. How you doing?
All right. Struggling to come up with more of those, but, you know, we'll
keep going. I actually own
Ivo.
Chickens.
Yeah. I think there's a couple of things to query there, Ian. Why have I got the chickens rather than Mr. Moore? And also, is that a specific Breaking Bad reference? Or have you just fluked that?
Do you think I just fluked a Breaking Bad reference? I'm outraged that you would think that. Ivo, what have you noticed this week?
Well, speaking of organised crime, I'd like to tell you about the culmination of the Serie A season. Not that AC Milan's victory was anything other than noble and hard won, but manager Stefano Pioli had his medal stolen from him during the pitch invasion. Now, we're obviously going to be covering pitch invasions, I think, later in the show. It's a quite a sensitive subject with some dark stories of late. But you've still got to say, if you've managed to swipe your team manager's medal during the pitch invasion, that is some sleight of hand. I think that, you know, it's... And the guy also, he said, grazie Stefano, on Instagram. So we've got some real hiding in plain sight from this Italian medal swiper. Pioli has also got this Scudetto already tattooed on his arm. So he is a man looking for sort of real long-term celebration of this title. I think it's also a reminder of how sort of triumphant and rare winning Serie A is, whereas by this point, Guardiola is probably using his Premier League medals as coasters.
Ian, what about you? What have you noticed this week?
A startling lack of controversy on the VAR front. Everything seems to have gone remarkably quiet on that. Now, whether they're getting that right, whether they're finally getting the decisions right, or people are just so sick and fed up of talking about it, I don't really know. But it
I'm
seems...
going for option two.
Well, I think it's got to be a bit of both. I think there's got... Because even the VAR decisions now, you're waiting for them, they come quite quickly, and you go, oh, yeah, fair enough. And you just kind of move on. So it's finally, how long has it been around? 3 years? But you finally, it seems to be doing the job that it was brought in to do. And, you know, we've now got a couple of months for the VAR technicians to completely screw it up before next season and, you know, bring in new rules. But for now, don't touch it. Leave it. Don't fix it if it ain't broke.
I think it'll be, you know, those questions like how many hours sleep do you have in a whole lifetime and how many hours do you spend on the loo? I think there'll be a bit that says how many hours do you spend waiting for VAR decisions?
Well, there was a point, I think, halfway through the season where every time somebody scored a goal, you'd sort of go, oh, all right, we've got, I might go and make a cup of tea until it's actually... till it's actually confirmed, and now you don't seem to get that intrusion.
Well, okay. Note the time and date that Ian Moore actually did that. In the meantime, the Premier League had a fittingly frenetic finale to a rollercoaster season. The headlines: Manchester City are champions. Liverpool's quadruple dreams are over. Tottenham qualified from the Champions League and Burnley were relegated. First of all, it was compelling drama. You don't get that in EastEnders, do you, Ivo?
I think you do get compelling drama in EastEnders. I don't think it's fair to...
Yeah, that's the point of EastEnders, isn't it?
You know.
Yeah, okay, you do get that in EastEnders, Ivo.
You do get it, and you also get it on the final day of the Premier League season. The two can coexist in. This isn't the zero-sum game you're setting it out to be.
You're right. City won the title, Ian, even though the whole country apparently wanted Liverpool to win the title. Although I have to say, I was at the Emirates, and Everton seemed to be celebrating City's away goals way more than their own. Is it a myth that everyone loves Liverpool?
I think everybody loves Jurgen Klopp, and he just happens to be associated with Liverpool. I think the two are quite separate things. What was interesting, because I sat down to watch it with my middle son, and he said before it all started, he said, "I don't care who wins as long as there's some drama involved in it." Yeah. I don't know, he'd been watching EastEnders all week and didn't see anywhere he wanted it. And it was just fantastic. But what was striking about the Liverpool game was just how utterly reliant they've become so quickly on Thiago. When he went off, it was a very, very different team. When they brought Salah on, you know. They need him fit for the final on Saturday for sure.
They do. At the Etihad, Noel Gallagher needed St John's ambulance treatment after being inadvertently headbutted by Ruben Diaz's dad during the celebrations. I mean, that is exactly the sort of thing I want St John's ambulance people to treat. Minor celebrity injuries. Chelsea became the only team not to be behind at halftime in a single Premier League game all season. I mean, that is the sort of prime content you don't get on other football shows, and for a very good reason.
You'll never sing that.
Ivo, with Chelsea's drab end to the season and possible demise to their natural level, I think we can all agree that football is the real winner here.
Well, I do think that is exactly the sort of angle an Arsenal fan would be taking off the back of the weekend's results. Poor old Chelsea.
And got our Champions League place.
Sleepwalking into the Champions League, qualification rounds free with their new owner pumping a load of money in over the summer. It's hard to imagine them sort of really dropping into mid-table anytime soon. It was one of the shortest three-way title races of all time, admittedly. But I still think broadly Chelsea fans would have... I mean, I think the changes at the top spell a lot more sort of potential long-term questions. But I think it's been an okay season. Do you really think Chelsea are in a bad position now?
Well, I think it depends on the ownership, doesn't it, really? And that may well be sorted out by the time you watch this programme.
I saw a headline on that this morning saying there's still a long way to go before this proposed takeover. I think it's the American guy, isn't it? There's still quite a long way to go before that can go through.
Todd Bowley, I believe it is.
Right.
I think the most painful thing for Chelsea is surely the fact that Lukaku has not really worked out. But then they've got to watch Tammy Abraham breaking records over in Serie A. I think that's, you know...
playing for a manager who doesn't like to attack. I mean, it's absolutely
but isn't that the most Chelsea thing ever, though? Isn't that been their complete modus operandi for the last 20 years, is that they'll have a player, make him worse, sell him, somebody else will make him better, and then they'll buy him back again. That's how they've always worked. If you think about the players that Chelsea have sold, you know, like Salah and De Bruyne, just to name two, who are quite useful.
They've done all right. Spurs qualified for the Champions League, fueled to a large extent on the goals of Heung-min Song. Ian, I've only read 500 articles this week saying that Son doesn't get enough credit for what he does.
Is this like one of those complaints of people being cancelled in national newspapers, writing an article about being cancelled in national newspapers? He gets an awful lot of credit. It's just that this is the first season he's scored more than Harry Kane. But everybody knows that the two of them together, when they're on form, are terrific. And he's done so much setting up for Kane in the last few years. It's lazy journalism. That's what it is. It's lazy journalism.
You're right, and I'm happy to do some once in a while, I'll be honest with you. I'm pleased for him. I genuinely am pleased for him. He seems like a decent guy. Arsenal and Manchester United will compete in the Europa League next season, and that seems about right for both clubs. Let's talk Arsenal first. The Champions League was in their grasp, but they blew it late on. Ivo, I hesitate to ask this question, but at the moment, are Arsenal more Spursy than Spurs? Should it be Arsenal-y? Arsy?
I think Arsenal-y is very much the new thing, isn't it? I mean, people are clinging to this Spursy thing. The thought that people were still describing sort of the weekend as and the final piece, sort of piece story in the race for the top four. that did not deserve the split screen treatment on Match of the Day. The jeopardy of whether Spurs would manage to sneak their way past Tottenham, past Norwich. Norwich, the most sort of dead on arrival team in Premier League history, just absolutely rolling over
you,
on the
you
final.
You could have said that in September.
Yeah, they were terrible. It was never going to happen.
But that annoys me. It really annoys me about clubs like Norwich that they go down, they're given the parachute payment so they can keep larger elements of their squad, so they're automatically therefore stronger than a lot of the clubs already in the Championship. So they go straight back up. Then they don't spend any of the money that they have and they go straight back down again. You've won relegation three times, you should keep relegation now and just clear off.
I think the phrase is yo-yo club. I mean, I think that's exactly what it is. Ian, we're talking about Tottenham. Tottenham finally have a manager who genuinely seems on top of the situation. How long before he falls out with Daniel Levy and stomps off in a strop?
Give it a fortnight. He's a terrific manager, though, isn't he? If you think of what state that team was in when he took over, and he's bought a couple of players that have made a terrific difference. But he's just got this... Clearly, he's got this mentality that he takes into the dressing room where... The players either A, really want to play for him, or B, are absolutely terrified that if they don't play well enough, that you know they'd be sleeping with the fishes or something like that. He's got an incredible power over his teams.
I agree.
Sorry about the national stereotyping, by the way, as well.
Not at all. It's all right. Let's talk Manchester United. Their season dribbled to its end with yet another defeat, this time at the hands of Crystal Palace. I mean, Ivo, can it get any worse? The stadium needs work. The board don't really care. They've got to offload a lot of the squad. I mean, Erik ten Hag is not a magician. Should they have hired Dynamo?
Listen, it was lovely to see Erik ten Hag there looking like my employee, of course, Walter White. Tough reference for anyone who's only just tuned in, but he was sat in the stands. I mean, I read a tweet this week saying that the most relaxed time in your life is the time between when you leave your old job and before you start your new job. That's surely not the case with Erik ten Hag. This sort of excruciating sort of end to this season where he's got to go and he's got to watch Rangnick, a man who he clearly doesn't have that much enthusiasm about working with, a man who's now got a lower win percentage at Man United than Gary Neville had at Valencia. And I love that's the barometer. That, you know, a lot of time for Gary Neville as a pundit and a politician, but his Valencia win percentage should indeed be the thing that's referenced whenever a Man United manager really hits the skids.
That is... What a beautiful stat. I had no idea, but that is damning, really, isn't it? Down at the bottom, it was between Burnley and Leeds for the last relegation spot. And when the dust settled, Leeds had somehow survived and Burnley were headed back to the Championship. it's hard to feel too much sympathy for Burnley, Ian. They haven't brought a lot of joy to the whole experience. Obviously to Burnley fans, but not for the rest of us. I mean, one rarely heard the sentence, "Who are we playing next weekend? Burnley, I can't wait."
No, that is always the great thing about Burnley is that they seem to be shuffled off to the Monday night football, which meant that as a family we could take an evening off watching live football because it was just too hard. And as a Blackburn fan, obviously I feel tremendous euphoria that Burnley are now.
That's
in,
why I
in,
came
in
to
trouble.
You. It makes
me a very happy man indeed. And we'll play them. We'll play them obviously next year in the Championship. which I'm looking forward to, because Burnley fans, not, you know, I don't want to say anything too disparaging, but there was a match between Blackburn and Burnley once, and Burnley fans tore up their own town centre. Clearly, they're not great with geography or even knowing where they were at the time. So it, we will welcome the Dingles back to the Championship next year. But I'm pleased that Leeds stayed up. I'm no huge fan of Leeds, and it's a shame that Bielsa's not still there. But teams like Leeds should be in the top flight. I just have this kind of romantic notion about what the top flight should look like, and Leeds should be there.
Well, you can't deny that they're committed, the fans.
That's See, it in Italy, they'd nick your medal, right? In Leeds, they'd be leaving you standing on bricks.
Have you had some particularly difficult Italian guests lately?
All my guests are difficult.
That's it. That's it for part one. When we return for part two, we'll be shaking our heads at displeasure at pitch invasions and looking on at possibly the most expensive bit of trolling in football history. See you in a bit. Part two of the football's on with drum majorette Ian Moore and Irish dance instructor Ivo Graham. So, the pitch invasion has returned to football. Sheffield United's Billy Sharp was headbutted by a Forest fan who's since been jailed. Port Vale's fans surrounded and attacked Swindon players. And Villa keeper Robin Olsen was attacked at Manchester City on Sunday. And at Goodison Park last week, after Everton came back from 2-0 down to Crystal Palace to win 3-2 and ensure their Premier League survival, the Palace manager, Patrick Vieira, God love him, was taunted and pushed about by an Everton fan. Suffice to say, things didn't go too well for the fan. Ian, I sort of feel like that fan might never have seen Patrick Vieira play football.
It's an odd decision. It's a very odd decision, isn't it? It'd be like a Crystal Palace fan or somebody wandering up to Duncan Ferguson at the end of a pitch invasion. You've got to pick your targets, I think, in that situation.
Yes. Gianfranco Zola.
Yes, so somebody small.
I'm not condoning it.
Let's not go down the Italian route again. You don't know how well Andy will be. The thing is about pitch invasions, and there does seem to be, personally, I think there's a lot more anger around generally than there has been for a while. It stand-ups, a few people have noticed that. That's just me when I'm chucking guests out. But it is the end of the season. I'm not condoning any of those acts, but this always happens at the end of the season. There are always pitch invasions at the end of the season, and people are talking as if there's an element of surprise that there are pitch invasions. Well, there are. You know, the teams are promoted, teams are relegated, whatever. This is the end of the season. So,
yeah, but we've discussed this on here in the past. I mean, we said last week, we'll reiterate now, we do not condone pitch invasions. They are a little bit crazy. I mean, it is a question to ask, though. How do you stop people invading the pitch? We've tried pricing them out. What about national service, Ian?
I'd bring back national service anyway. Never mind pitch invading. Yeah, there was that thing. Do you remember Ken Bates years ago wanted to install an electric fence at Stamford Bridge and was very vocal about him not being allowed to electrocute people on a whim. I don't know how you stop it. You obviously can't put barriers up. I think you've got to, I don't know, you know, you can have a moat. You have a moat with alligators around the pitch. You have to try and repel people. You have to give them, something has to be on the pitch where They kind of go, look, I just don't want to get involved with this. So I don't know. Hare Krishnas dancing around the pitch just before the end of the game. People tend to shy away from that. The entire cast of Cats singing the soundtrack from the middle of the pitch just as the match ends.
People would
turn their backs on that, I would have thought, pretty quickly.
Come on, let's be having him.
That would do it. I mean, Eddie Howe. Has talked about how it's a disaster waiting to happen. You know, a mob could attack a player or a manager and we're back to fences. What about a lifetime ban for them and their families, Ivo?
Well, I absolutely think that lifetime ban should be issued. I think the retrospective justice is the thing that's probably easier to sort out. But it doesn't sort of prepare you for things happening in the future. It's obviously incredibly shocking to see how many incidents there have been in the last week alone. I wasn't at Swindon's second leg against Port Vale because I was doing a gig in Dubai, which is one of the more creative ways to avoid pitch invasion.
How would they deal with a pitch invasion in Dubai, do you think? I don't need to answer that.
Yeah, I think after the generous reception I was given this week, I have been comedy washed into saying that they would deal with it in a thoroughly appropriate and modern manner.
I mean,
just stick them outside from the air conditioning for 5 minutes. That'll sort them out.
Can I also ask, by the way, about pitches nowadays, and particularly in the top division? They're excellent, aren't they? They're like snooker tables, and they probably don't take kindly to 14 overweight blokes' knees sliding in the goal mouth. I mean, Ian, will no one think of the groundsmen and women?
14 overweight men swimming about in the goal mouth is pretty much the Blackburn squad, I think. So, I mean, they're used to these things. It's obviously they're so pristine, and you see that when you catch reruns of like the old matches, like the big match runs still on ITV4 sometimes, and you see just how appalling the quality of playing surface was, even as recently as you know the late 80s or whatever. I don't know what you do. Lifetime bans are all very well, but and retrospective punishment is all very well. But this is a mob mentality caught up in the heat of a moment, and that kind of thing just is not considered. You know, they're not running towards the pitch going, oh, no, lifetime ban if I'm caught on camera. They're just going with the flow. I don't know how you stop it. I don't.
No, I think everyone feels much the same way. So I'll tell you what, we'll move on. Let's talk about the transfer saga of the summer, which may have already taken place as Kylian Mbappe has decided to stay at PSG as long as he's given de facto control of the entire club. This includes a say into who they buy, who the manager is, the catering at the training ground and the type of shampoo used in the showers. Ivo, would conditioner be a deal breaker for you?
I think it would be. If I'm getting 200 million euros a year, you know, I probably won't insist on a sort of free tub of Aussie colour mate as well, but every little helps. I think the Mbappe thing is sort of mad because of almost the shamelessness of the U-turn. You know, he said that the project has changed. It's hard to know what exactly they're really set on winning League One in February rather than March next year. That's the new objective. He said he's looking forward to writing sort of more new chapters. Which again, I mean, I'm not the novelist on the panel, but that's if Mbappe was bringing out a sort of short story collection based on his career so far, the publishers would reject it from just being the same story over and over again over the last few years. Like he's not mixing it up, and you know he's got a brother at PSG who doesn't play, the lesser known Ethan Mbappe. Perhaps this is all part of a long term plan to bring Ethan into the picture, but. It's pretty dispiriting stuff across the board, I'd say.
I agree. Ian, you're a French citizen, right? Mm. Aren't you proud that an institution owned and run by an all-rich emirate have scraped together enough money to keep a national treasure in France?
It does make you proud. I'm beating my chest and singing the Marseillaise when I read that news the other day. I was actually out last night with some French people and who were previously Mbappe fans and really turned against him because of the way this has all been carried out, and saying that he's not even a footballer anymore. He's just a product, you know. And where's the love of the game? You know, the usual complaints from people who are too old to know better, really. But I don't feel any sympathy at all for Real Madrid, who have previously conducted themselves in pretty, you know, should we say, shadowy ways in transfer sagas and with their collection of Galacticos and how they've approached people. So for Real Madrid to complain about another team involving themselves in dark arts, as PSG probably have done, I couldn't care less either way if Madrid or have hurt feelings. It's interesting that it's come through La Liga as well, because it's how La Liga see themselves. They've always seen themselves as the main draw for young international players, and that's clearly their grip on that is loosening.
No, you're right. I mean, La Liga were not happy at all that a club owned by a nation state could spend money they didn't have. As you alluded to, they issued an official statement, which was essentially a page of moaning.
Yeah.
This type of agreement attacks the economic stability of European football, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And as you say, all in support of a team that bought you Galacticos, sold their training ground to the Spanish government for £500 million,
yeah,
and have been paying Gareth Bale £500 grand a week to work on his short game.
Yeah.
Ivo, I mean, Ian's right. It's hard to root for the underdog when they're Real Madrid.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, I'm sure there are, you know, little sort of charming elements to the Kylian Mbappe sort of PSG story. You do have to get out an electron microscope to see them. But, you know, he apparently signed for the club after Unai Emery and the PSG scout turned up his house with croissants one morning. Did you hear this? As part of the sort of charm offensive 4 years ago. Florentino Perez turned up at 4 p.m. with burritos. Too late. The Spanish.
Yeah, but early for the Spanish.
Too late.
Yeah, early. Yeah, that's the thing. He'd have turned up at 10 p.m.
This is lunch. All right. Let's have a quick game of Who Am I before we go at the break. I give out some clues and our guests have to try and work out who I'm talking about. Here we go. I was born in 1977. I played for 8 clubs, starting in Sweden, 2 in England, 2 in the US, and 1 in Scotland, Japan, and India. At club level, I won the league in Sweden, as well as 2 Premier League titles and 3 FA Cups, and I was named Premier League Player of the Year in 2002. And I played 75 times for my country, scoring 14 times, and appeared at 3 Euros and 2 World Cups. But the only thing I won at that level was a modelling contract for underpants.
This is,
you might
this
get this.
This is one of the easier ones.
Yeah. Who am I? You'll find out. You'll find out in 2 minutes' time. Before we go at the break, I should say we have a podcast that you can listen to at your leisure or even when you're working if you're doing something manual that doesn't require a lot of attention. It's called The Football's On and On, and it's available where podcasts live. See you after the break. Part 3 of The Football's On with the youngest ever Deputy Commissioner of the Met, Ivo Graham, and the man who claims to have invented tie-dye, Ian Moore.
I think Ian's come out rather better than me on that front.
I don't know. I can't think of a worse thing to have invented.
I know. Hey,
the world has never recovered.
Okay. Before the break, I asked Who Am I, gave out these clues. I was born in 1977, played for 8 clubs, starting in Sweden, 2 in England, 2 in the US, and 1 in Scotland, Japan, and India. At club level, I won the league in Sweden, as well as 2 Premier League titles and 3 FA Cups, and I was named Premier League Player of the Year in 2002. And I played 75 times for my country, scored 14 goals, and appeared at 3 Euros and 2 World Cups, but the only thing I won at that level was a modelling contract for underpants. Who am I? Ian Moore, you know this answer.
It's Freddie Ljungberg, isn't it? Sadly, I did only get that from his pants contract, which is tragic. I'm surprised he didn't score more goals for Sweden. 75 times he played, and he only scored 14. I thought he was playing
in a sort of number 10 role, so he was making more than he scored. But then he turned up at Arsenal. And Arsene Wenger said, you've got to play on the wide right. And he goes, I'm a number 10. And he goes, we've got Dennis Bergkamp there. And he went, oh, all right.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, you know. Did you know that one, by the way, Ivor?
I did. I was there before the modelling contract. Something I've said about many of my exes.
Nice. Just for information, he played for Halmstad in Sweden, Arsenal and West Ham, Seattle Sounders and Chicago Fire, Celtic, Shimizu S-Pulse, okay, in Japan, and Mumbai City. He obviously won the majority of his trophies at Arsenal. Now, as well as some players playing their last games for their clubs last weekend, Mike Dean, John Moss and Martin Atkinson have all retired from refereeing. And I think we can speak for most football fans when we wish Martin Atkinson and John Moss well. John Moss looks so off the pace at Villa the other week. Honestly, and he looked like the coach driver had been drafted in to referee the game.
It's I don't know whether this is an age thing that they've all retired at the same time, or whether the Referees Association have decided to put out a calendar for next year and knew that these three wouldn't make it, because referees have got younger and buffer, and they and Dean Moss and less so Atkinson just really don't come up to snuff on that regard. Is Mike Dean the last of the old kind of headmaster won't look you in the eye while he's making a decision kind of ref? Is that the, are we seeing the end of an era here?
I do wonder about that. I mean, I've never quite felt the hatred for Mike Dean that some people feel for him. I mean, I also, by the way, I'm not sure that a program containing three comedians can really have a go at someone for being a bit performative.
Yeah, exactly. I love his involvement. You know, of course, I'm a Premier League neutral, so I can enjoy such ludicrous subplots as the referee celebrating a goal that's been scored, like he got the assist by playing a good advantage, which was a real Mike Dean high point.
He did do that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think, you know, these people, they're all part of the sort of fabric of our, you know, of our deep and rich and passive-aggressive enjoyment of the game. And I think if it was referees you hadn't heard of every week with no backstory, it would be a much worse place. I wish Mike Dean well.
So if they're singing, who's the so-and-so in the black, they're actually asking the question.
Also, last week was 10 years since Aguero and the, you know, the great last-minute winner against QPR. And I think it's important to remember one of the great subplots to that great plot was Mike Dean booking Aguero for taking his shirt off in the celebration. History literally being made. And Mike Dean's going, there's an asterisk here. And
I think that's a really good point. I think we kind of want our referees to be less blokey and more joyless. I think that's part of their role in the game.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, the list of refs for the World Cup was published. While two Premier League referees, Anthony Taylor and Michael Oliver, will be going to Qatar, no VARs from the Premier League will be at the World Cup, although I'm told there'll be two from the East Hertfordshire Under-8s League. They get some very contentious decisions down there. I mean, Ian, you mentioned VAR. Having watched it being administered here, you wouldn't want anyone involved in it doing the VAR in international tournament.
No, and I think now that they've finally learned how to do it, I'd give them a rest. You know, don't make them travel. Just keep them in the porter cabin, leave them there, and just put in some sandwiches under the door, and let them know when they can start again.
There will also be three female referees officiating at the Men's World Cup. This is the first time. Ivo, I don't know about you, but I prefer female security at comedy gigs, and I sort of think the same principles might apply to football. I mean, it's got to be harder for some 6'4" centre-half to be aggressive in the face of a 5'2" referee.
There's a lot to unpack there, mainly your own personal preferences. But I think ultimately this is long overdue, of course. And, you know, they're all pretty experienced. The Stephanie Frappart, I think her name is, who's already hosted a Super Cup final and several Europa games this season. You know, it's time to sort of have a bit more equality on the bigger stage. And also, I think the real commitment is being shown by FIFA by hiring sort of proper incompetent referees. And I think this year's Graham Poll is the fact that they've hired, I think he's Zambian, his name Jani Sikazwe. He was the guy who tried to stop an African Cup of Nations game after 85 minutes because he had heat stroke.
He did stop it, didn't he?
He had heat stroke, which you'd say, well, fair play, that's a very specific circumstance. Good luck at the World Cup in Qatar.
Yeah.
This match is not going to last an hour.
Oh, we didn't think of that. I mean, when we're talking about the refs here, I think Mike Riley, you know, they can all retire, but Mike Riley just carries on being head of the PGMOL. Ian, is he going to be in the job forever? Is he like the Keith Richards of refereeing?
I wouldn't like to comment on how his training methods are, no. I thought Martin Atkinson was going into the... He's going to be training refs, isn't he? But that's what Atkinson's doing.
I think Atkinson's all right.
Yeah, I think he's a fine ref. I don't really know. I think the referee is almost like the Masons, isn't it? You're not quite sure what's going on behind closed doors there. It's a very shadowy organisation, I think, the whole Referees Association.
Yes. Okay. So while the Northwest takes most of the prizes, North East football is on the up. Middlesbrough got to the playoffs. Newcastle got more money than Amazon. And Sunderland are once again moving in an upward direction. The Black Cats came through their League One playoff final against Wycombe Wanderers and will be in the Championship next season. Sunderland fans did everything they could to get down to London for the playoff final at Wembley in huge numbers, although in the hotels around Wembley, they were apparently heavily outnumbered by fans of Andre Rieu, who was playing at the arena. Ivo, you don't want to mess with menopausal women who like light classics, do you?
No, but I imagine the Andre Rieu fans would have put up a good fight as well.
Have that, Sunderland. They do deserve a bit of fun, though, don't they, Sunderland? I mean, 1973 was a long time ago. And I'm aware that I'm saying this to a Swindon Town fan who won a trophy in 1968.
Yeah, I
69.
1969, I think, is the date you definitely remember, Ian. But I think Sunderland have had this sort of measurement of everything by trophies. Sunderland had some incredible sort of Premier League years in the sort of late 90s, you know, in the sort of Kevin Phillips, Niall Quinn era. It's been quite a bleak few years, but they were also really dragging out their relegation from the Premier League for quite a long time. And sometimes I think dropping down to the third tier, that can give you a real sort of, you know, a real sense of just how bad things could be. And I think now that they're back in the Championship, you'd have to think that's the upward momentum will probably continue.
Yeah.
I think that worked for Blackburn as well, going down briefly in Division One as well, and then went back up to the Championship and had a much better season than we were expected to have. And also, I think possibly that Sunderland maybe dodged a bullet in January, February, when they were looking for a new manager and Roy Keane pulled out of the process. So it may have been very different. Maybe a very different conversation we'd be having now.
Yeah, that's probably true. All right, now it's time for our quiz. Three questions on the weekend's action and two on a subject of your choosing. Although we've already chosen them, but you get the choice. You'll get the hang of it. Anyway, first up is Ian by virtue of seniority. Not in comedic terms. Not that he's not funny. You know what? I'm digging a hole here. Ian, question one. Kylian Mbappe chose to stay at PSG instead of heading to Real Madrid, but which Premier League club did he trial at before making it big? Was it Arsenal, Chelsea, Manchester United or West Ham?
I am going to say it was West Ham.
It wasn't. It was Chelsea. He trialled at Chelsea.
You see what I mean? How they let go of these players?
They do. They did. It's amazing that anyone could watch Kylian Mbappe and go, nah. Not for us. It's not for us.
It won't fit in with our team ethics.
Question two. The Premier League title was settled by a point as Manchester City pipped Liverpool to the title. Including this season, how many times has the gap between first and second been a point or less? Is it four times, six times, seven times or nine times?
Are we just talking the Premier League?
Yes.
Or the whole top flight? Okay, so it's not nine. Nine times seems ridiculous. Blackburn did it by one point, so... So is it four, six,
seven,
nine?
And nine?
Six.
Seven, Ian, seven times.
Oh.
95, 98, 99, 2010, 2019 and 2022. And of course, in 2012, it was Aguero. That one, Manchester City ahead of Man United on goal difference. Naught out of two, Ian. Blackburn-esque,
shocking,
I would almost say. Norwich City, is one for you, have been relegated for a sixth time in the Premier League era, but they are not the team who has been relegated the most from the top flight, including pre-Premier League now. Who is the team that's been relegated the most? Is it West Brom, Sunderland, Burnley or Birmingham City? Tough question.
Birmingham.
It is Birmingham. It is.
It was a toss-up between West Brom and Birmingham.
It was.
Birmingham.
That was very, very good.
So I got a point.
You got a point. 12 relegations for Birmingham City. Ian has one out of three. Now, at this point, Ian, you have a choice between two subjects. You can have either European titles or non-league finals day. So let me hazard a guess which one you might go for.
European titles?
Indeed. European titles. There it is. Question one, or question four for you. AC Milan won the Italian title for the first time in a while, but just how long has it been since the red side of Milan won the top division? There's no multiple choice here. You just have to tell me. I'd like it in hours.
Okay.
No.
Years is all right. I'm going to go 8 years.
It's 11 years. They won the title last in 2011. It's been a while for a team of that size. And question two. PSG strolled to the league title, matching the record for amount of top division French titles. But how many points were they clear of second place Marseille?
Now, when did they win it? So I'm going to say 21 points.
Not as many, 15 points, because they were sort of on the beach, I think, for the last, 2 months or something. And Ian Moore scores 1 point out of five. Ian.
Just awful, awful.
You got Freddie Ljungberg, though. That was only on the underpants.
Yeah. But, yeah, there wasn't enough pants questions.
All right, 1 out of 5 for Ian Moore. After the break, it's Ivo's turn. We must away, but only for a brief moment. Welcome back to the final part of the Football's On. In the last section, Ian Moore scored 1 out of 5. Now it's Ivo Graham's turn. Ivo. Leeds survived another Premier League season by the skin of their teeth. They became the first team since 2011 to avoid relegation whilst being in the bottom three at the start of the final day. Which team did it in 2011? Was it Wigan Athletic, Sunderland, West Brom or Portsmouth?
Wigan Athletic.
It was. I might have guessed that one as well, actually. Yeah. I sort of vaguely remember that. Wigan Athletic. They were in the bottom three. They won on the final day of the season and stayed up. Question two. Roma took on Feyenoord in the first ever Europa Conference League final. But before this game, how many European titles do the two teams hold, Ivo? Is it 1, 3, 5 or 7?
7.
I like that. No, it's 5, actually. Roma have 2, the Inter-Cities Fairs Cup. They won that in 60-61. And the Anglo-Italian Cup. Did you even know about that, Ivo?
Swindon Town have competed in the Anglo-Italian Cup.
They have. That's right. We've talked about that. They won that. And Feyenoord have 3 European trophies. They won the European Cup in 1970 and the UEFA Cup in 74 and 2002. So still 1 out of 3. Question 3. Spurs secured 4th spot in Champions League football for next season, which looked unlikely for most of the season. Antonio Conte took over the side on the 3rd of November 2021. What position in the league were they upon Antonio Conte's arrival? Were they 6th, 7th, 8th or 9th, Ivo?
8th.
No, they were 9th. They were not doing well at all. It took over on November the 3rd. They had 15 points. And they won 5 and lost 5. Although there must be some mitigation in the fact that up to that date, Harry Kane was still sulking. So, Ian had European titles, Ivo. So that means you have non-league finals day, Ivo.
Good.
Excited?
Yes.
I can hear it. In the first game of the day, Newport Pagnell Town... I didn't know they played. Took on Littlehampton Town, but who won?
It's the Battle of the Service Stations. And I'm going to go with... Well, I'm going to go with Newport Pagnell, the better services.
Newport Pagnell Town won 3-0. Yes, they did. Oh, nice work. 3-0. That is 2 to Ivo. And Ivo, now you can just relax. The second game of the day was the FA Trophy, which saw Bromley defeat the Hollywood-backed Wrexham. What was the score?
2-1.
No, it was 1-0. 1-0. To Bromley. I think that at one point, Wrexham scored a goal which was offside, and I believe Ryan Reynolds and his mate were celebrating, having not been aware of the rules. But anyway, Ivo, you won 2-1. Outstanding.
It's one of the hollower victories of my career. One of the points I got was for saying Wigan, And that was me starting reading all of the options again to myself as I made my decision, but you just took it as my answer.
So. You don't have to tell us that. It just ruins the magic.
I feel really hard done by now.
Anyway, it is the Champions League final live here on BT Sport on Saturday night from the Stade de France in Paris. Coverage starts at 6 p.m. Sadly, we won't meet the teams in their hotels or have a special edition of Champions League final It's a Knockout, where the Madrid president Florentino Perez will try and knock FSG's John Henry into a paddling pool using a giant cotton bud. More's the pity. Ian, Liverpool versus Real Madrid in Paris sounds like a Champions League final. I mean, it couldn't be more romantic if Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers did the pre-match entertainment.
I believe they are. I believe that it's been planned. The way holograms are being used in advertising these days. Who knows? Who knows? Einstein will be there serving behind the bar. It is. It's a proper final, isn't it? And I don't know. Maybe my man love for Jurgen Klopp has gone too far on this. But I see it as light versus dark. You know, good versus evil. I like Carlo Ancelotti, but Real Madrid have always had a dark underbelly that I've never really got on with. So I'd love to see Liverpool do it. I'd love to see them get their three out of the four.
Yeah.
I just worry that their injuries are beginning to stack up. You know, Van Dijk, Salah came on, obviously, so he looks okay. But like I said earlier, Thiago has become so important to the way that Liverpool midfield ticks. You can't see a midfield with Henderson and Milner creating a whole lot against Real Madrid. So yeah. So if that's the case, and I'd say, and you heard it here first, if Thiago doesn't play, I think he'll put Harvey Elliott in midfield.
Well, okay. Well, we heard it here first. Ivo, I think Liverpool are better than Real Madrid and will beat Real Madrid. But I know this has never been said before, you can never write off Madrid.
Well, no. I mean, they've proven that so much this season. And it's really brought up quite a big argument in one particular football WhatsApp group I'm in about whether you should support English teams in Europe or not. Because Chelsea and Man City, notionally, you should get behind them as the English team in Europe. But there's been a certain degree of satisfaction to see both of them knocked out by the sort of arch villainy of Real Madrid, the proper sort of boss level. So it'd be quite an English triple for Real to complete. I don't mind it. I think this Liverpool team are wonderful. I think that's been covered by Ian. It's quite sad to hear Ian saying, I'd like to see Liverpool get the three of the four. What an immediate downgrade that is from the majesty of the quadruple. Fingers crossed, they can still get three of the four.
Listen, I'm a Blackburn fan. I can't aim high.
If they are to win this one, I want this to be nil all and penalties as well, because I think that's the greatest pub quiz question of all time in years to come. Who in 2022 won three tournaments without scoring a single goal in any final? So that would be a nice way for Liverpool to do it. That would max out the length of the match, which is good news for me because I'm doing two gigs on Saturday night, which isn't ideal. The dream scenario would have been that I'd be piling into the Champions League finals after celebrating a Swindon victory in the League Two playoff final that afternoon. Alas, it's Port Vale versus Mansfield, the neutral's choice. And I see your Klopp love, and I raise you a deep, deep respect for Carlo Ancelotti. There will never be a photograph of a football manager better than him smoking a cigar with his players after they won La Liga.
It was very cool. Very, very cool. I think this point about English fans supporting Liverpool, I think they are a team that you can love a little bit. And Madrid, Ian, won't have the Bernabeu, will they?
I think it'd be very even. I know Liverpool are a better team, but Real Madrid don't lose many finals, do they? They just don't. It's like their right to be there. You have to sort of prize it off them almost. I can't wait. I'm not gigging, by the way. What are you doing? What are you gigging on Champions League night four? What's the matter with you people?
He's changed, Ivo. He's changed, isn't he?
The quiet satisfaction of the novelist.
Okay, let's have a bit of this week in history before we go. This week in 1984, Terry Venables, El Tel, as he was christened by the press, although not, I imagine, the Telegraph or the Guardian, was appointed Barcelona manager on a salary of £3,000 a week, which was a lot in those days. Ian, remember El Tel getting the Barcelona job?
I do, actually. I do. It seemed so strange. And it's funny because I was just thinking about it with the Champions League final as well, that there's this kind of almost like superstar manager now. But there obviously, El Tel was one of the first superstar managers, that he was bigger than the actual role he was playing. So, yeah, I do remember him. Yeah. Turned up of in course. Shorts and everything, didn't he? Wearing a kit, asking for a game.
Shorts and everything. And in May 1967, Ivo, Celtic became the first British club to win the European Cup, beating Inter Milan 2-1 in the final in Lisbon. Some of the fans, I believe, have just got home. I do love that the idea, the whole of that team came from within 30 miles of Glasgow. That'll never happen again.
Celtic certainly do have players from further afield these days.
That is true. One can't argue with that. That is it with that geographical fact in the show. That's it. Thanks to Ian Moore and thanks to Ivo Graham. That's also the end of the series. Thanks to all our guests and thank you guys for watching and enjoy the summer, and we'll be back in August. See you soon. Ta-ra.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.